It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore a new national report that examines the experiences of LGBTQ plus people in the criminal legal system. And it attempts to look beyond the data that says the incarceration rate of people who self-identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual is three times that of the general U.S. population. Join in on your experiences or that of a loved one in the system and part of a marginalized community. 800-642-1234. Jane Harith is an assistant professor of social work at UW-Milwaukee. She is author of this report on overrepresentation of people who identify as LGBTQ plus in the criminal legal system, published by the Safety and Justice Challenge. Jane, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. You found it difficult to count the number of LGBTQ plus people in the criminal legal system. And from what you gathered, how often are LGBTQ plus people being arrested?
Sure. This report, like you said, is commissioned by the MacArthur Foundation. And in it, I compiled some of the existing research documenting overrepresentation of LGBTQ plus individuals within various stages of the criminal legal system. So arrest, incarceration, as well as some of the harmful experiences that people have once they're inside jails and prisons. And like you said, it is very difficult to measure how many folks inside identify as LGBTQ plus. Some of the reasons for that are that a lot of the data regarding arrest and incarceration is collected by criminal legal system institutions. For example, the Department of Justice, the Bureau of Justice Statistics, and they have not traditionally asked questions about gender identity or sexual orientation on surveys. And then another issue is that knowing how much bias, discrimination, and violence LGBTQ plus individuals are subjected to when they're inside jails and prisons, a lot of folks choose not to self-identify as LGBTQ plus, would feel uncomfortable sharing that information even if it were asked on a survey. So it's very challenging to really accurately represent how many folks inside identify as LGBTQ plus. But the existing research that has been conducted both inside or of folks once they've been released and they're out back in the community and it's a little safer to self-identify indicates, like you said, that gay, lesbian, bisexual individuals are over two times more likely to be arrested. Gay, lesbian, bisexual individuals are three times as likely to be incarcerated. Transgender individuals, particularly transgender women of color, experience very high rates of arrest and incarceration. So the small amount of research that we do have indicates very high rates of arrest and incarceration.
I want to pick up on one note you said there. The justice system, the Justice Department, mm-hmm. you said they traditionally haven't asked about gender identity in their surveys. Do they ask now?
Oh, that's a great question. I think there is a movement to start including some of these questions. So I think they are starting to be included more and more. But like I said, there's still this issue of folks feeling uncomfortable self-identifying on a survey. Mm-hmm. And so that's unlikely to change until we have that's not an easy solution, like adding things to a survey. There's a lot of work to do to create conditions where folks feel more comfortable self-identifying.
Is this the case of overrepresentation in the adult and the juvenile prison system?
Absolutely. The existing research indicates particularly high rates of arrest and detainment in juvenile justice detention facilities for LGBTQ plus youth, particularly lesbian, bisexual, cisgender girls, and transgender youth. So youth seem to be particularly impacted. And we see that looking at other outcomes related to LGBTQ plus youth as well. We know that a large percentage of homeless youth identify as LGBTQ plus. So there's all these other sort of intertwined issues related to marginalization. And the over-incarceration piece is just one part of that story.
We're talking about this new report on incarceration rates of lesbian, gay, and bisexual people with UW-Milwaukee social work faculty Jane Harith. You can join at any point here, 800-642-1234. Jane, let's look at solitary confinement. You cited a survey that found 85% of incarcerated LGBTQ plus people had been in solitary at some point. How is it being used?
Yeah, so that that statistic in particular came from a great survey that was conducted by an organization called Black and Pink that supports LGBTQ plus individuals who are currently incarcerated. So they were able to get, because they're a community-based organization, get some really great information regarding the experiences of folks who are inside. And they found that in some cases, LGBTQ plus individuals would prefer to be in some sort of solitary or protected housing designation when they're inside jails and prisons in order to protect them from discrimination and victimization. But in a lot of cases, they found that individuals were placed in solitary confinement, and it was not what those individuals had chosen or wanted. And so, again, the reasons for that often a institution will state is for the incarcerated person's protection. And yet we know there are all these harmful consequences associated with solitary confinement or isolation. There's some emerging research that indicates very negative mental health consequences. So there's some important conversations here to be had about how to protect people's safety, how to prevent victimization in ways that don't worsen mental health outcomes and create these other harmful consequences.
Right. Such a double-edged sword there. The prison system would point out that solitary confinement, like you said, is being used to protect that individual in prison, to protect them from other prisoners. Is there any basis for that? Because as you mentioned, solitary can have such emotional, physical, mental stresses.
Right. Institutions, of course, are trying to protect themselves from lawsuits, from other harmful consequences of folks experiencing victimization. So that is the solution that has been come up with often. However, like you said, we know that it creates all these other harmful mental health outcomes for folks. And it also may not protect against victimization, because at least according to the survey conducted by Black and Pink, a lot of LGBTQ plus individuals are experiencing victimization by prison staff and guards. So it's sort of a band-aid solution, which is not actually solving the problem of victimization, and it's creating all these other problems of negative mental health consequences. And really the broader solution is to address these larger issues of discrimination and bias against LGBTQ plus individuals.
Looking at HIV treatment, and you said HIV treatment is one area where LGBTQ plus inmates are regularly denied inclusive health care. What did you see there in the system in regards to HIV treatment?
There is a little bit of a positive story there related to HIV treatment. It used to be that access to HIV treatment, regardless of LGBTQ plus identity, was hit or miss inside of jails and prisons. And that the research indicates that access to HIV treatment inside of jails and prisons, particularly in prisons where people are incarcerated for longer amounts of time, that HIV, access to HIV treatment has improved in over the last couple decades of the HIV epidemic. What the research indicates now is a huge issue is folks not having continued access to care once they've been released.
So continuity of care.
Exactly.
Once they transition from prison back to the community, can they continue their treatments?
Exactly. And we know that continuity of care is critically important for keeping viral load down for folks who are HIV positive and reducing the transmission of HIV. So access to care in the community for folks who are back home on probation or parole is a big issue. So HIV care is certainly an issue. And I also highlight in the report something that continues to be a huge issue for a lot of folks is access to gender-affirming medical care. So for folks who are transgender, who are trying to access hormones or other forms of gender-affirming care, They may not be able to get it in their institution. The doctors that are working inside of jails and prisons may not be familiar with the standards of care for transgender individuals. And they're subjected to bias and discrimination of staff and medical providers within jails and prisons, choosing not to provide the care that folks need because of bias against transgender individuals. So that's a huge issue that is ongoing, and some institutions across the country are working to address it, but it's really continues to be very hit or miss.
Jane Harith with us, part of the social work faculty at UW-Milwaukee's Helen Bader School of Social Welfare. Her new report looks at factors contributing to the overrepresentation of LGBTQ plus people in the criminal legal system. Join in on the system, the policies, the practices that may be biased against LGBTQ plus individuals. What solutions look like here? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing this new national report that brings together research on how lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people are overrepresented at every stage of the criminal legal system, and where the research and policies go from here. Still time to talk about your experience in the prison system, being incarcerated and part of the LGBTQ plus community. 800-642-1234. We have UW-Milwaukee Assistant Professor of Social Work Jane Harith, author of the report, stays with us. Jane, picking up on the bias and discrimination of staff, you mentioned bias perhaps against transgender inmates who may not receive appropriate health care. I'm wondering, what recommendations do you have for the criminal legal system to enact and enforce non-discrimination policies for staff? What would you recommend there for educating staff?
Related to the healthcare question, I think one of the really important pieces is to have folks, medical providers, advocates from outside of jails and prisons be supporting access to medical care, also supporting decisions about housing designations for transgender and gender expansive individuals. I think it may not be possible in all cases for jails and prisons to provide the appropriate amount of training to really address bias in time to meet the current pressing needs of individuals that are within inside of jails and prisons. So having outside folks come in and be part of the decision-making teams, I think would be one step that could be taken right away that would support the needs of folks who are currently incarcerated. And then on longer term, one of the goals of the MacArthur Foundation and their Safety and Justice Challenge is to really think about how we're using jails and prisons to address broader social issues. And this report is really trying to highlight the ways in which we're using jails and prisons to control gender expression and sexual orientation. And so we need to have broader conversations. We need to create wide-scale social change to change the way that we perceive LGBTQ plus individuals and to work towards greater equality and liberation.
Along those lines, I was reading the prison policy initiative calling out issues of youth being pushed toward these criminalized behaviors like drug sales and theft and mm-hmm. what they called survival sex, all which would increase the risk of arrest. And so what do you make of those social issues, whether it be homelessness or something else that affect whether someone will be pushed into the criminal legal system?
Right. In the report, I try to go beyond just presenting the statistics about rates of arrest and incarceration and delve into some of these pathways that lead up to involvement in the criminal legal system. And like you said, particularly for youth, one one common pathway that we've seen again and again in the research that I've seen in my own experience working with LGBTQ plus youth as a social worker is youth experiencing homelessness, and often that is due to family rejection when youth come out as LGBTQ plus. Not always, but a large number of youth report experiencing homelessness after being kicked out or pushed out by their families. And then from there, youth are involved, are experiencing homelessness. They're involved in forms of criminalized survival, like theft or sex work, in order to meet their basic needs. And all of those things, homelessness, theft, sex work, are all criminalized behaviors. They're all things that could lead to young people coming into contact with the police and potentially being arrested and then incarcerated. And so when we think about this overrepresentation in the system, it helps to back up a little bit, look at these pathways, and think about where are the points of intervention that we might be able to target to prevent people, particularly young people, from getting swept up into the system to begin with. And so to me, I really think about support for families of LGBTQ plus youth in order to prevent family rejection. I think about housing programs, employment programs. I talk in the report a little bit about the importance of name change support for transgender or gender expansive individuals, because it can be hard to get a job if your legal ID has a name or a picture that doesn't match how you identify or the name that you're using presently. You know, things like supporting survivors of victimization. That's another pathway by which people enter the system, is experiencing intimate partner violence or bullying in school, and then defending themselves and then getting into trouble for doing that. So there's all these things that are related to the criminal legal system, but are also a couple steps before, that are ways that we can intervene. And folks, regardless of even if folks are not working within the criminal legal system, if you are working in a school, or you are working with young people, or you know young people, you're a parent or family member of young people, there's lots of steps that we can all take in order to better meet the needs of LGBTQ plus individuals, particularly youth, and then start to solve this problem.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about marginalized groups and representation in the criminal justice system with UW-Milwaukee Assistant Professor of Social Work Jane Harith, who authored this report. You can join in 800-642-1234. Jane, you talk about several organizations that are working to reduce how often LGBTQ plus people are disproportionately involved in the system. Can you name some names here of these organizations and what they're doing? Like, for instance, Breakout.
Sure. Yeah. Breakout is a New Orleans-based organization. They work a lot with LGBTQ plus youth. And they do a lot of the types of things that I just mentioned. They support folks through the legal name change process. They provide know your rights training, so young people know what to do if they're stopped by the police. And that can really help to de-escalate conflict, reduce the likelihood of arrest. There's also an organization called Black and Pink, which I mentioned. Their national organization did this, the survey that I was talking about earlier with currently incarcerated folks. There's also a Black and Pink Milwaukee organization, and they primarily, the Milwaukee organization primarily supports a pen pal letter writing program to currently incarcerated LGBTQ plus individuals. And that's a great way just to provide some social support to address those issues of isolation and negative mental health consequences that we talked about earlier, and also just to provide a link to folks on the outside so that folks who are inside can talk about some of the issues they're experiencing. I know I have a pen pal, she's a transgender woman, and being able to talk about her lack of access to hormones and try to brainstorm with her what can be done about that has, I think it's been helpful for her. So just having a connection to folks on the outside can be really, really important. So folks can get involved in Black and Pink Milwaukee and find a pen pal if they're interested, but also just support their organization in other ways as well, if that's not something that folks are interested in. So I'd really encourage people, especially in the Wisconsin area, to check out Black and Pink Milwaukee.
Well, Jane, thank you so much for joining us and sharing this report.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and for bringing attention to this issue.
Jane Harith is an assistant professor of social work at UW-Milwaukee. We have a link to her report. It's published recently by the Safety and Justice Challenge. It was commissioned by the MacArthur Foundation. Find it at WPR.org/mornings. Ahead on the morning show, Wisconsin Public Radio reporter details the latest news from the state's election for U.S. Senate this year. We recap a variety of developments in recent days and look ahead to a busy fall. You can join in on the U.S. Senate race, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.